Intervju Radija Študent.
Pozdravljeni na valovih Radija Študent. Današnji intervju pa bo z enim od nastopajočih danes v Kino Šiški, v tem paketu neodvisnega underground revolucionarnega hip-hopa. Poleg Icon A-Class, ki je bolj znan pod znamko Dialek, in poleg APOC-a bo nastopil tudi nekak, lahko rečemo, celo headliner tega večera,
yeah.
Soul. In Soul je z nami danes v studiu. Soul, hej.
Hey, what's up? Greetings, good people of Ljubljana.
So, this will be like a short interview, but still I'd like to touch some topics. Like, the first one, which I think lots of people would like to hear about, is the story of Anticon Records and your part of the story, like from 98 till when you left the label.
Anticon Records was a dream. I always, since I was a little kid, started recording. I always knew I wanted to run my own record label, wanted to have a crew, wanted it to be like No Limit or Death Row or Wu-Tang or, or like the Black Moon, Smith & Wesson, kind of crew. And then, around the mid-90s, I started getting exposed to all this experimental hip-hop through the internet that no one knew about anywhere, stuff in Canada, Ohio, all over the world. And I just started hoarding and collecting all this information and collecting all these contacts in the industry and just doing little things here and there to kind of get connections all over the country. And then one day, I just decided I got fired from my job, so I moved to California. When I moved to California, I hit up Slug and Dose because I had just been trading music with those guys and said, hey, let's go make an album. So we all just went and recorded Deep Puddle, Dynamics. Mm. And when we recorded that, we decided we would make an album that has no references to hip hop, that it'll be a totally philosophical, poetic, social document. And so that's what we did. And then like that kind of set the stage for what Anticon was going to be, was this record label based on putting out experimental music, music that is poetry, that works, as social critique. I started the record label, and then at the time I was reading a lot of Marx and Emma Goldman and radical left stuff, and I noticed that my relationships with the other artists on the label were being strained because I was the boss and I didn't want to be the boss. I didn't want to own the music and be responsible for my friends. I wanted us all to be responsible for ourselves and for each other. So we made it this collective where all the artists that were invested in Anticon became owners of the label. Things worked pretty smoothly for a little while, but then basically what ended up happening was that a new label manager ended up taking over, who wasn't an artist and wasn't there from the beginning, and he wanted to make decisions that would take things in a more kind of trendy, like Pitchfork, route. And I wouldn't have cared if it had benefited me, but I knew none of that would benefit me or Nostom or any of the core artists. And we created this to support us. So when I started seeing all the resources going to these random bands of the week, as I started kicking up a lot of dust, and basically, I was the odd man out for a long time, and from like 2005 to 2009, it was very depressing, it was very frustrating, and so I was like getting ready to quit music. So one day I was like, you know what, forget it, I'm just gonna take all my stuff back and be my own DIY artist label. And then since I've done that, my life has been awesome. Everything is great now. It was a really dark period, that period. I look back very fondly on my time with Anticon. It was amazing. I still love all those guys, but I don't want to run a business with them.
And during this time, like beginning of the new century, you also moved to Barcelona for a little while. Why did you decide to move to Europe?
I mean, it was kind of a paranoid kind of thought. I thought that I thought the iron wall, the iron curtain was about to fall on America and that we were going to enter this martial law craziness. And I just thought the empire was going to collapse and I wanted to get out of America. It's kind of seems ridiculous now. So we just went, me and my wife, we got married and then we just moved around Europe and just went from Portugal to Greece and whatever we liked the best, we were going to stay. So we just decided we liked Barcelona and we just decided to stay there. And it was awesome.
And then why did you decide to go back?
You know, when Hurricane Katrina happened, I was like, shit, I'm missing out on all the fun. I need to get back to America. You know, like the same reasons that I left were the same reasons I went back was I realized like Michael Moore at Cannes Festival, you know, like getting all this applause for criticizing America and the Mediterranean. It's just feels fake or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to go back to America and fight there because I felt like that's where it really mattered. That's where things are falling apart. That's the center of the empire. And so that's where I wanted to be. So I just went back there.
So now if we fast forward a little bit, the album that came out last year, A Ruthless Criticism of Everything. It was the first solo album in a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe in more than 5 years or something like this. So could you just tell a little bit about how it happened? Also, this is like a Marx text, like the same.
Well, first of all, I just always liked the ruthless criticism of everything existing is a letter that Marx wrote to Bruges, I think his name is, and they were, he was just, you know, saying that we need to have a huge critique of everything, not just capitalism, not just labor, but we have to, you know, everything is included in that. So, and to me, that's what Occupy was the beginning of, was this ruthless criticism of everything. It was going after capitalism, but it was also attacking, you know, social systems and systems of control. You know, not very, it was the beginning. So that's what that was about to me, was like starting this conversation or advancing the conversation. All my music has always been, you know, ruthless critiques or whatever, but I felt like that was the best title for that album. So it's just basically my experiences. Like that year I was pretty much involved with Occupy most of the year, so it's just kind of like my diary of like my frustrations with those experiences and what that was like. And I did it through Kickstarter. You know, I was able to go to a really nice studio but you know, it was a cool experiment with like putting out a record on my own and seeing what I could do with this. Seeing, can I still get press? Can I still get in blogs? Can I still sell records? Do I make money? The answer to all those things is yes. And so that's great. So it's kind of like creating this new way of working. It's almost like, you know, publishing a book or something. Mm-hmm. It's like I can make a record, I can produce it, I can put it out in a month, and then I can live off of it. And it's a really cool way of working right now.
And production-wise, it's like you gathered beats from there are loads of different producers on the record, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just basically hit up all my friends. You know, since Anacon, I've made a lot of new friends through Fake Four, and just through touring, and just through experiences living in Denver and the experimental electronic scene. And I just have all these different kinds of friends. And so when I'm working on and they're always trying to send me beats, but I'm always like, oh, I got a band, I'm not doing this. Or when I'm not, I'm making my own beats. So I was like, but it's always fun to collaborate. So when my band kind of fell apart, I thought it would be fun to just work with different producers all the time. And then, so yeah, it's a fun way of working, man. Somebody sends you a beat, you get psyched, you record to it, you send it back. It's fun.
And like this Occupy movement, this record has a lot to do with the Occupy movement. So here in Ljubljana, in Slovenia, we know a lot about Occupy Wall Street, but we don't know much about Occupy Denver. So just a few words on.
If you ask me like the the current state of Occupy is essentially, I would argue that it's kind of dead. Like the infrastructure is there, all these people found each other, all these other things are happening in the wake of it, but Occupy doesn't exist like it used to. Occupy Denver was really crazy, man. It was not a non-violent movement. It was we reserved the right for self-defense, which made us a lot different than some of the more liberal occupies. It was very radical, very hard left contingent there, you can look it up online. They were like, you know, one time the camp, as the police tried to evict, you know, we set the, not, I didn't, but the camp, the camp was set on fire. And it was, I mean, we did a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It was just a huge eye-opening experience to just see, you know, thousands of people just having sit-ins in the middle of the road, just shutting the city down. A year before that happened, I never would have imagined that I'd see Denver like that. I'd see like pretty much low-level street fights all over the city, you know, twice a week for 6 months. It was the police were in full counterinsurgency mode. And people are just reeling from that experience and trying to like process it and trying to figure out, you know, what's next. Most of the energy for Occupy Denver has gone into fighting the Keystone XL pipeline, which is like a huge pipeline running from Canada to Texas, and fighting against hydraulic fracturing in Colorado, which is how they get oil out of, how they bleed rocks in America. Yeah. So
this is the next step.
Yeah, this is what we're doing now. But it's crazy. It's just crazy.
And is it true that even the Slovenian philosopher Slavoj Žižek influenced this record a little bit? Like I saw in one interview you said like something about, I don't know, some one of his speeches that it was really like influential or something like this.
I mean, I've been a huge Slavoj Žižek fan up until he said that the left needs a Margaret Thatcher. he kind of lost me there. But I love so many things about him. I mean, I think he's more of a poet than a philosopher when it comes down to it. And that's why I like him. I like the way he plays with words. But I think that, like, at the level he's at, I think he needs to be a lot more careful about the way he talks about things, because people are going to take him at his word now. He can't just play with words all the time. So that, like, his Stalinist shit has got to go, man. It's got to go. But, I've read a lot of Žižek, listened to a lot of his lectures. I'm a fan. I don't know necessarily if anything on this album was influenced, but... postmodern philosophy, it influences my stuff a lot. So I don't know. Definitely, I mean, Žižek somewhere along the lines, but I'm not going to give him props today because he needs to take back what he said against about Margaret Thatcher. The left does not need a Margaret Thatcher.
And
that's true. America's, he won't be allowed back in America anymore if he keeps saying things like that.
And you're actually touring this new record, No Wising Up, No Settling Down.
Yeah.
This is like kind of a second part to the Ruthless Criticism.
Yeah, I mean, it was really weird the way it happened. Like, just one day, I was like, I put the album out, then I was like kind of depressed for a couple weeks, and then one of my friends is just, this guy Spencer was like, let's just do songs, like forget making another album, let's just make some songs. And so I was like, yeah, no pressure, you know. So then I just started making songs, and then I was like, they were coming out awesome. And then I was like, oh, I still have these 6 songs left over from Ruthless Criticism, let's make an EP. So I just kept making songs and then getting rid of the old songs, and then next thing I knew, like a month later, I had a whole album worth of new material. I recorded the album almost in like a month. And that's what makes it what it is. I think it's a really good record. I think it's one of my best. It's different. Have you heard it?
Not really. I've heard maybe a song or two.
All right. Well, I think I gave you guys a CD.
Yeah, we got a CD.
So there you go.
And it was released like 1st of May, Labor Day.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like symbolic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know, really, it's kind of like, if I think about it, it's kind of a bad move because you're not supposed to be. You're not supposed to be doing consumerism on May Day. I guess I must have missed that part. Oh well.
Yeah. And what about the song "Assad is Dead"? So, if you just talk a little bit about politics, what do you think? Like, this is like what's happening at the moment. At least I saw it at the news a couple of days ago. So this idea of supplying or not supplying arms to rebels in Syria. And the American government opposed to this idea, which is kind of a European idea, because they are afraid the these arms would get into the hands of fundamentalists, and even they even talk about Al Qaeda, which is kind of ridiculous. So, do you have like an opinion on this, or maybe even this wider Syrian problem?
I mean, I'm not an expert on what other people should do with their countries. You know, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like if the people in Syria want weapons, if the rebels are asking for weapons, then we should give them weapons. We give weapons to Israel, might as well give them to Syria. You know, and if they get in the hands of Al Qaeda, it wouldn't be the first time we've given weapons to Al Qaeda anyway. So, but yeah, I mean, that's just a tragedy. It's like, when I recorded, I think I'm Noam Chomsky, you know, 3 years ago, I was talking about Libya and like how we invaded Libya, but yet more people had already died in Syria than had died in Libya at that point, but just, it wasn't worth going into Syria for whatever reason. Mm. You know, I mean, it's always the song "Assad is Dead" is more just like a statement against dictators everywhere, like all the Assads of the world. You know, all their days are numbered. The people are gonna rise up, some more successfully than others, obviously. So yeah, I don't know. That's a horrible, sad situation because it's like, you know, you want to overthrow Syria, you know, you want to let the people control Syria, but the truth is, once Syria's out of the way, Iran is next, and then, like, you know, then where do we go after there? Africa, China? It's like, yeah. Geez, man, just the empire never sleeps.
Yeah, sure.
And I should say drones don't sleep. The drones don't sleep.
Yeah, drones kill children.
That's not funny.
No, it's not. No, I just saw some video the other day with these drones in Afghanistan. Like this graphic video and drones, and then the statistics of how many soldiers have, or how many civilians died from them, and it's heavy shit.
Is it the cartoon Droney?
No, it's
That's
not.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Droney, the cartoon is pretty funny.
Okay. And so do you have like an utopian vision, like what can happen of this decline that's been going on for tens of years? Like, is there like a light in the end of the tunnel?
You know, I absolutely believe it, and I'm not trying to be the Margaret Thatcher of the left when I say this, you know, I've been reading. I'm really into like David Graeber and his ideas about horizontalism, and there's a lot of ideas going around now about, you know, applying more concepts of direct democracy to ruling our society. You know, a lot of people say we should do away with the state, but then replace it with a federation of just interconnected areas. But I think a more directly democratic system would be a lot favorable. I think, you know, a lot of people think capitalism is going to collapse in 5 years. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think capitalism is very resilient. And so I think now it's just a matter of, you know, for anti-capitalists to kind of advance that struggle and to bring on that collapse. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to Greece next week. I'm staying with various squats, and I'm really interested to see how they're kind of adjusting to, you know, like their autonomous quote-unquote autonomous, so like they're existing outside of capitalism. They don't, like, everything they do is through barter and trade. So I don't know. I mean, I just look at it like, you know, grow your own food, build up your own, you know, like prefigurative politics, like trying to, you know, trying to live as if you were free, and carrying that forward and spreading that spirit. You know, I think reclaiming the commons, like whatever we can do to reclaim public space, I still think that's very important. And just, you know, trying to recreate the world, but not losing your mind doing it, you know. But yeah, I don't know. So my short answer is, yeah, I think we could definitely live in a far more democratic world. But, you know, if Occupy, I mean, one thing, Zizek is right in the sense that, you know, direct democracy as like an end result, where just people are just, you know, like, we don't want to have a general assembly to figure out if we're going to take the trash out and have people arguing in the middle of Ljubljana for 8 hours whether or not we need garbage men or not, you know? I mean, obviously, we need to develop more more modern and realistic and efficient ways of running the world. That, like, right now, everything is so archaic. Like, representative politics are just completely outdated and don't reflect reality at all. It's just it's insane. So yeah, in short, I don't think that, like, any amount of reform can change anything, at least in America. I think it's just completely extra state solutions that we need to be going for.
And since Margaret Thatcher is kind of the theme of this interview, did you see there was online this quote from Ken Loach, the Brit, he's from Britain, film director, and there was this quote on, I don't know, Facebook, when she died, there was one of his quotes. Did you see that?
No.
The quote was, well, let's put her, burial on the free market, and whoever bids least gets the job. That's what she would like.
Wait, let's put her burial on
that's ceremony. Right.
Yeah, exactly. it's sad.
Anyway,
rest. Yeah, yeah. Go to hell. See you in hell, Margaret Thatcher.
And and this is not your first time in Ljubljana.
No, I've been here.
Yeah. So do you like performing here? Like?
Yeah, I do. I love coming to former Yugoslavia. I love Eastern Europe. I love, you know, I mean, I love all of Europe. Every country in Europe is like a different world to me. I even enjoyed Germany this time, which was very surprising to me. But yeah, I've always loved Ljubljana. You know, I forget that it's like in the mountains and it's so green. You know, I guess I just expect to see unexploded bombs everywhere or something, but I know that that's not the case, but whatever. But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, I love it here though, man. I love that little squat area downtown where it's like all the little collectives, and it's just like another world over there. Like, that's the kind of shit I'm talking about. Like, we don't have that in America, you know. But you guys have it, and you're still still serfs. So I guess we have a long way. We have a lot further to go than you guys. So.
And you're touring for how long now? I mean, the tour, is it a big tour? Is it gonna take a bit? How long will you stay in Europe? Like,
I'll stay in Europe. We have a couple more shows. Then I go to Greece for a week, and then I come home for 2 weeks, and then I tour America for 3 weeks, and then I take a couple months off, and then I go do some more Europe and more American stuff. So I'm touring a lot this year. I haven't toured at all, really, in the last, ever since my band broke up. I didn't want to tour because I just didn't like just rapping over Ableton, but now I've figured out a new way of performing with like samplers and like doing more noise, like that kind of like wall of sound stuff that I like. So I'm really excited about what I'm doing, so I want to play more shows. So that's my goal this year, is to play enough shows so that I can buy a house. That's my goal.
That's a lot of shows.
Yeah, depends on where I want to live. I might want to live in Texas.
Okay.
That's like 5 shows. Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to buy a house, you're right. But at least maybe me and my wife will go on a vacation, at the very least. A vacation. Like, even the poor, this is what's so stupid. The poorest of the poorest people I know in Europe all go on vacations.
Mm.
Like, I was trying to buy drugs earlier, and the guy's like, oh no, my drug dealer only deals on Monday and Thursday. And I'm like, what is wrong with this? Like, you guys, like, even your drug dealers have, like, rights here. Like, you guys are, like, picking which days you work. It's like, in America, if you're a drug dealer, like, you have people come into your house at 10:30 at night while you're trying to watch, you know, Pulp Fiction with your girlfriend, like trying to buy a dime bag, and where it's like, here, it's like, no, I only sell hash on Thursdays. It's like, come on, man. Like, we have so much to learn from Europe, man. It's crazy. We have so much to teach you, also.
Also, yeah.
Like, I bet you don't know how to work an 80-hour work week.
No.
Yeah, we could teach you a lot about that.
Chinese can teach us the 100-hour work week.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And we'll see you tonight at Kino Shishka.
All right.
Performing with Dalek and Apoc.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Apoc. Apoc's my homie from Colorado. So I don't know why he's out here. I don't know what the hell he's doing out here, but I'll find out tonight.
Cool.
All right, peace. Thank you.
Thanks. Tole je bil torej Soul danes večer v Kino Shishka skupaj z Icon A-Class, bolj znan pod etiketo Dalek. In pa Apoc. Danes večer ob 9 v Kino Šiška. They loan you money for a home, you call yourself a owner, but these cats will sell you Dito from under you. You're out 50k, your belongings on the side of the street. If you don't leave, they bring an AR-15s. Waco, that's how we rollin'. Till this motherfucker looking like a Paris commune, and these cats get scared. The state got a monopoly on fucking people up and letting banks steal property. Everybody won't be rich and get about the hood, but you ain't gotta be rich to be a Robin Hood. Ask Wells Fargo, it ain't all good. Between the cops and the banks, we know who's Robin Hood.
Boxed in, big brother is watching us. Dig ourselves a hole with no fiscal options. I don't fit into the mold that they pigeon our thoughts in. The real clock hold in that resemble.
Interview Radia Student.